Greetings from Podcastville. It's Wednesday, the 16th of motherfucking October. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by... Let me talk to you people from the heart. Have you ever bumped into a porno by mistake and the chick's got a really, 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 really hairy pussy? Yeah, it's a pussy. You want to dive in head first. But there's something about that fucking cobweb mixed with spiders. You don't know what the fuck it is. You know what I'm saying? We have the same thing as men. If you look at yourself in the mirror and truly look at your dick and look what's growing around your dick, you're going to go, it looks like the fucking outside of the Munster's house. They should just call my dick 1313 Mockingbird Lane because it's disgusting. There's tumbleweeds. There's shit growing under your fucking hair, turtleneck, just like mine. I'm not going to lie to nobody. I don't condition my dick hair and it's out of whack. It looks like fucking Lucille Ball play with a chemistry set. But that shit ends. It's trick or treat, motherfucker. If you want to sling out fucking candy and have these bitches sucking on your tailpipe on Halloween, you got to trim the bush with fucking Manscaped. Listen, my friends over at Manscaped created the one and only tool you need to shave your balls and the area around your fucking Halloween stick with. It's called the Lone Mower 2.0 for a reason. They threw away with the 1.0 and upgraded their trimmer with a skin safe technology. Listen, it's going to be, you're going to go to a bunch of Halloween parties, you're a little older, you don't have time to take them to a hotel and fuck them in the ass, but there's nothing wrong with getting a little dick suck from fucking, you know, some blonde bombshell dressed up as Charlize Theron in that movie. She wants to walk around with those heels off, she's going to suck your dick. You take her in the bathroom, you give her a little punch, and blah, blah, boom, you're ready. And then when she walks out, she's got a smile on her face. Why? Because she didn't smell death on Halloween. She smelled a nice dick that had no fucking hummus smell to it or nothing. Go to manscaped.com right now. I'm going to get you 20% off your first order when you use promo code CHURCH at manscaped.com. And if you order the perfect package, well, I'll explain later, they'll throw in a free travel bag when you use code CHURCH. C-H-U-R-C-H. That's manscaped.com. Use promo code CHURCH. C-H-U-R-C-H. For 20% off your first order. Keep your balls and your fucking Halloween stick clean. The Church is also brought to you by, how many times I gotta tell you? Fucking my book. You're going into the heat of baseball fucking playoffs right now, and you've been sitting there scratching your fucking ass. What are you thinking? And you watch the games anyway. But listen, if you're trying to bet NFL, baseball, MMA, UFC, Chinese ping pong, my bookie's got it. They got it better incentives and more fucking lines than any other sports book, period. Listen, double your first deposit today. Use promo code CHURCH to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. What are you fucking waiting for? Visit mybookie.ag today. That's my bookie. Grab a pen. I know you got left back in the sixth grade. You were deaf in one ear. Here. MYBOOKIE.AG. And don't forget to use promo code CHURCH when creating your account to claim this fucking bonus, all right? Go win some money, you cocksuckers. You play, you win, you get motherfucking paid, Jack Lee. Kick this fucking mule once and for all. We got my man, Rick Ingram. We got the Christ Killer with a fucking ready to go. Uncle Joey, a little AC/DC. Kick that muley. I want fire to come out of those speakers. I don't give a fuck. Wednesday, Thursday morning, whatever the fuck you want, bitch. Where's Dean Delray?
I never smoked no cigarettes. I never drank much food.
That's it.
But I'm only a man, don't you understand? And a man can sometimes lose.
Are you fucking kidding me?
You gave me something I never had. Pull me down with you.
Are you fucking kidding me or what, Rick?
They fucking rock, man.
You don't come out with nothing but fucking. This is like the back of fire of Batman's car when he pulls up. The flames that come out.
That jet engine. You start with the jet engine. I like that.
Rick Ingham, a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me on, man.
Deserves to be on this podcast for a long time. It's been you.
I appreciate it.
And here we are. You're shooting your first special for All Things Comedy on Friday.
Yeah, Thursday night. Yeah.
You got a little blessing from Al and fucking the king of comedy, Bill Burr.
Yeah, they're helping me out.
They're really good people.
They are, man.
I know they're doing great things with All Things Comedy. Came back from your city.
Yep.
Great city. Went over to Q39.
Great know, barbecue.
Like I was telling you before the show, nothing bothers me when somebody thinks they're smart or they're swarmy. And they talk to you about how they're going to the Prance or Bali or some shit. Listen, yeah. That's all great. But go to Kansas City first. You know, I think if I was president of the United States, there'd be a 30-state requirement before you were able to leave the United States.
To check out
you have to visit
your
what
country.
We have to offer before you go dropping your money over there with those commie bastards.
My mom went to Europe for the... She left America for the first time ever this last summer. She went with my sister to go watch the women's soccer games in France or whatever. And my dad did not go because he said, no, there's still too much in America I want to see. So he's full-blooded American.
With me, I think that's the biggest blessing that I've gotten from comedy, that I've gotten to see what we're really about as American people.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I see these people around my neighborhood that raise their kids a certain way, and then 2 weeks later I'm in Kansas City, St. Louis, you know.
Yeah.
I'm in the heart of the country.
Real Iowa, America.
And you see how people act, how people, you know, these people don't take care of themselves. Not, you know, you see the differences.
Yeah.
There's people whose ankles look like they're about to die, like the, you know, but they're nice people, the warmth, you know. It's real nice to go to breakfast and to look at your tab and it's $7.87.
Yeah.
And you look like you're robbing the joint. You're looking around at cameras.
Just, yeah,
because they got you.
They must have messed up, right?
You walked out on a $22 tab, and you look at it, and you see two eggs, bacon, home fries, a toast, coffee included.
Right.
You know, take a cup to go.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, wow, I live in L.A. Well, this is $22 at eat.
Yeah, you get that $45 brunch.
See,
where you're like, it's literally just kale and egg whites?
Yeah. No, you see what America... Who's still holding it down? You see, you don't pay the tax bracket. We were discussing this 2 days ago, the tax brackets that we pay. So it's pretty interesting. It's also interesting to see how Kansas City is a comedy town, but there were Chiefs people at the airport with full Chief regalia on Thursday night, like the employees.
Yeah.
Then Friday when I went to Q39 and I walked around the city, I saw more fucking red shirts.
Red Friday.
It was tremendous. And you're like, if they act like this on a Friday, what do these savages act like on a fucking Sunday?
they're out of control.
Tremendous. A couple of years ago when they won the World Series, I saw how emotional you were, and I looked into it when was the last time they won. And, you know,
30 years.
I still remember everybody used to hit great home runs at the old Kansas City. Where the water fountains?
We still got it.
Well, that's still the stadium.
Still the stadium. They just rebuilt it instead of...
When I was a kid, every time somebody hit a good home run, it was at that fucking stadium.
Yeah.
Like Pete Rose played there. Johnny Bench played there.
Yeah.
Like that stadium has still a lot of fucking history.
Yeah, and the Royals and the Yankees were like rivals 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
so it was the American League West versus American League East. And
I know not everyone likes sports. You don't have to like sports. But, like, I still get choked up. Like, there's a guy on the Celtics now named Taco who's... They're going crazy. Like, when they go crazy... Like, I remember for that Kansas City World Series, there was a guy from, like, Japan or China or something.
He was a Korean.
Korean. They flew him in, and he fell in love with the team, and the city fell in love with him. Like, that's how I know I like the city. Like, when, like, the stadium is full at the beginning, and it's full at the end.
Yeah.
Like, small stuff like that.
We don't do that. The other night when the Dodgers, when they hit the Grand Slam, you could see people leaving.
I hate that.
There were yellow seats all throughout Dodger Stadium.
You could see people leaving, and that's the style. It's like when you do a UFC in Vegas.
Yeah.
It's the last fight. You think those two seats next to you are empty. You tell your buddies to come down, and you'll see some guy come in for the last fight.
Right.
Go do that same UFC fight in the prelims. It's packed at prelim time.
Right.
Those people pay $298. They're getting every minute that's coming to them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're getting every minute that's coming to them.
Yeah, middle America, they don't fuck around with sports. They don't fuck around. Because that's what they have to do.
Texas.
All week.
Texas.
Yeah.
Oklahoma football. I mean, it's just, I love it. I love this time of the year. I love to see the college, you know, and I don't know who's playing when.
Yeah.
I just know that if I sit down and I see two teams, I go, oh, shit, it's an old rivalry, you know.
Right.
Ohio State, whatever, Colorado, Nebraska, that's the country, man.
Yeah. If you can get people talking shit, I'm in.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. Well, speaking of talking shit, I torture Lee for eating lizard meat all the time. I think I actually ate mouse meat last night.
I'm so excited to hear the story.
You know me. I talk about my successes, which have been limited, and I speak about my failures on this podcast. But I have an excuse. Like, when Lee used to go get the lizard meat over at the taco place, he had been warned. Okay? He had been warned repeatedly, and he kept
by
going
you,
back.
By
he kept
thing.
Going back. He kept going back. His father ended up in the hospital. He's never been the same again. Doesn't matter. If Lee's eating at it, they got lizard meat there.
Fucking Lee.
God damn it.
There's a Cuban thing called bocalitos. They're tremendous.
What are those?
You need 1,000 of them.
Of course.
It's this fucking thing they make, like ham spread on white bread, and they cut the edges off, and they're all triangles, and they cut them in half. When you go to a Cuban birthday party, they got tables full of them, and they have like little olives in there. It's like a pimiento loaf.
Okay.
And you start eating them when you're high, and you just can't stop. And the next thing, you're just shitting fucking seeds from all the pimentos you eat. All those little red strings, they're covered around your shit. So I told my wife around, there's a Facebook page called All Things Cuban, and they had a recipe for it. So I sent it to my wife. And I know it includes deviled ham. Does anybody know what deviled ham is?
I've never even heard of it.
Exactly. That's how fucking, you don't even want to know.
It sounds authentic.
The devil ham was big in the 70s. It was a spread that you just put on bread and you ate it. And it really tastes like Vienna sausages crushed down. But God knows it was crushed in. Like, that's why I don't like hummus. Because everybody thinks it's just garbanzos. They don't know it's isosperm. And it's like fucking Arabic.
A lot of, yeah.
Yeah, like you don't know what else goes in hummus.
Some of that terrorist duck butter from the chode. Yeah.
You eat that hummus and go, this doesn't taste the same. No, because there's no ISIS soldier sweat on it. That's what they're trying to do to get into your DNA so they can try to radicalize you. So the next thing you know, you're fucking kneeling, fucking praying at lunchtime. You know what I'm saying?
But seen it 1,000 times.
So last night at about 6 o'clock, it's Monday night, I'm off. I popped 300 milligrams of those capsules. I'm solo. I'm watching the Washington Senators, whatever, Nationals kick the fuck out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
And finally, my daughter goes to bed. My wife goes to bed. It's 9:15. I go, what a great time to write. At 11 o'clock, Sons of Anarchy comes on. It gives me an hour 45 to take care of little things. I wanted to write out a joke and whatever. Oh, my God. About 10:30, the hunger didn't fucking stop. So I opened up with a banana.
Okay.
I'm on Weight Watchers. I opened up with a banana. No biggie. Still hungry. Open up with an apple. Ooh.
Not doing it. Not doing it, no.
Then I got a protein bar. Boom. That filled me up for a little while, but it just wasn't cutting it. I needed something disgusting. Pizza. I needed a tuna sandwich.
Yeah.
I needed something. So I go on the cabinet.
Get some substance
in it. My wife doesn't get no more cold cuts. We're on a no cold cut fucking thing for like the last 8 months.
Okay.
No more salami. Salami was my savior at night before Sons of Anarchy. A little salami, a little American cheese on white bread with some mustard. Nobody gets their feelings hurt. There's nothing. There's fucking hot dogs. I don't know how to use the stove. It's one of those New Year 8 stoves. So I look in the cabinet, and what's in the cabinet, behold, she actually went and bought the recipe for that thing. There was that fucking deviled ham. Took it out, popped it open, and just spread it on white bread. And as I was eating it, the first two bites were marijuana-based. Like, you don't even taste what's in the sandwich.
Yeah.
But by the time I got to the third bite, it started tasting weird. I tasted rodents. And eyeballs, Vienna sausage. They had a little bit of Vienna sausage.
Just a little bit mixed in.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But everything else was just bad.
Yeah.
I took the can away. I threw the fucking bread away. I made toast and I went to bed.
My grandpa used to refer to mystery things like that as it's nothing but lips and assholes.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And they give it to you in prison, mental institutions. Yeah. And if you're on the white trash side of life, like you go home and there's devil ham.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man, we got the fancy
Mom
stuff.
Busted out Kool-Aid, devil ham, and potato chips. We're going deep into the murky water.
Not eating spam tonight.
Dog, 6 a.m. My eyes just opened. I swear to God, my eyes just opened.
That's fire guts.
And it felt like it was concrete. Oh. So I walked over first and tried to get coffee to really open it up. I knew I had an apple and a banana in there. So I knew I was safe. That's when you're covered. You got to
right. A little lube.
Apple is there to fucking open up the asshole. I drank a coffee. Couldn't even finish the coffee. I had to run to the bathroom. Whew. And it was one of those 20-minute bricks to come out.
Oh, yeah.
But once the brick came out, it was like, bop. I was like a fucking demolition derby. And then I got up and it started squirting. Like I started squirting. I had to squirt for 15 minutes. I did another espresso, get that little baby rat foot.
Sure.
Maybe it was like a claw that got caught.
Talon hooked in there.
So wait, how much did you eat? Like how many scoops?
3 bites.
That's it? Oh my God.
Of half the can. It was like I just made a thin sandwich just to test the ground.
We're talking like bubonic plague rat meat, though.
I mean, this is fucking nasty, guy. Like it destroyed my internal systems.
The devil.
I had to cancel my 9 o'clock boxing class. I had to cancel my 9 because I kept playing it out. Let me see how I feel at 10.
Right.
At 10, I was feeling. Then I started puking. As I shit the first time, I puked breakfast, and I go, that's it. I canceled my 11 o'clock doctors, and I fucking went and laid down.
Because that's how I tested. If something doesn't taste good when you're high, that's how you know it's not good. Like,
it's not
good. Yeah, that's
it was fresh. The label, it's something that you brought from your childhood.
Yeah.
That does not work anymore.
Well, your
body.
The problem, they probably don't make it anymore. So it was probably a jar from your childhood.
It probably is. Yeah. No, they still make it. They still make it. It's big. Because you added the dishes.
Right.
White people. A lot of white people. Midwest.
Yeah. It makes them feel cultured.
When you go to prison, you eat that shit once a week.
All right.
You could order that from the commissary.
Got
it. Of deviled ham in the night. Put it on a fucking
Is it like the stuff you get at CVS and it's like, I think I might have seen that. I didn't know it was a spread.
It's like a white can with a devil on it, with a little devil on it. That's how you know. Beware the devil. That devil got into me this morning like the Exorcist. I'm surprised my head didn't spin.
He was trying to tear through
Jesus
you.
Jesus fucking Christ. It was bad. I went to sleep about 10:45 and I got up at 12:30 exactly. Jeez. Jumped in the shower. Shaved, got out, had some chicken soup, and made it hit by one. Took 2 bong hits.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't get a call from you today. I was like, oh, I wonder what's going on. He must be busy.
No, yeah, I was out cold.
He was busy surviving, it sounds like.
I got a big day. You know, I got spots at the store. I got there. I'm like, this is the last day you really want to fucking get sick. So,
yeah.
This is it. So, Thursday night, huh?
Thursday night.
1 hour.
Yep, going to do an hour. And, it's hard for me to get opportunities to do extended time, especially in LA. So I kind of been talking to, you know, Brenton over at All Things Comedy about trying to work something out. And he hit me up a couple weeks ago and was like, hey, you know, we got this date at the Comedy Store. Would you want to do it then? And I said, sure. So going to get a couple cameras and just try and catch some of that magic. Because, you know, the Comedy Store's, it's an incredible lineup every night.
Did you start in Kansas City?
Yeah, I did.
I'm on stage.
Yeah, I did. I did open mic in Kansas City for like 2 years when I was in college at Stanford and Sons, in down in Westport in Kansas City, the late Craig Glazer's comedy club back then, and you know, it was weird. Like I started. Chris Porter was doing the open mics back then. There, a guy named Mike Baldwin, my buddy John Sheezer, pretty much the same. See the same people, Dustin Kaufman, the guy who now owns a comedy club in Kansas City. And but it was like I could get up once, maybe twice a week. And I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live back then, so I did impressions and shit like that. And always had my plan, though. You know, I wanted to move to New York or L.A. as soon as I was old enough to get into the clubs. So I was just kind of wasting time in college until I turned 21. And once I turned 21... started making the plan to move, and you know, lucked into a situation where my girlfriend at the time cheated on me, and that really motivated me to get the fuck out as well. So things just kind of fell into place and moved out here. I actually came out for a weekend over Christmas the year before I moved out. Comic named Freeze Love.
Good man.
Yeah, he some sort of a friend of a friend told me to go down to the Comedy Store and meet this guy named Freeze Love, and he would show me around the comedy clubs or whatever. So I went down there. I was only 20, couldn't get in the club, kind of was hanging out on the patio. Freeze showed up, talked to me for a little bit. He said, well, let's go in. I said, yeah, they won't let me in. He said, oh, no, you're with me now. It's cool. Walked by the back door guy. The guy said, yeah, he doesn't have an ID. And Freeze said, yeah, he doesn't need one. And we just walked right past him. They let me in, performed in the Belly Room. I was hooked. I'm like, oh, this is...
Oh, you did perform.
Yeah, they let me perform. I did like 7 minutes at the end of a show up there, like right around midnight or something, 10 people, and never even went to New York. I was so enamored by Los Angeles and end of December. It was like 75 degrees. And I'm just loving it. Got to perform and moved out end of the following summer. Came out, I was still 21. Started working the door. I did open mics at the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, all that bullshit.
What year was this?
2002.
Okay.
So, you know, I'd do the sit outside all day waiting to do the open mics. And Ren Azizi and Eleanor asked me if I wanted a job there. And started working the door there. And then I was working the door there.
What a great door staff.
Six nights a week. And
that was my all-time favorite door staff.
Yeah. It was a good crew.
Me,
Ari, yeah. Skippy Simon.
My God.
Ren Azizi.
Cap, yeah.
Yeah.
Duncan was the talent coordinator.
Duncan was the talent coordinator. Duncan, when I got passed, when Mitzi passed me, it was a complete fluke. I'd worked the door there for maybe 4 months. I had like maybe 5 minutes of okay material. But Mitzi just saw something and was like, oh, you're a regular. But I was showcasing to keep my job as a doorman. So I didn't even think like, hey, I might become a paid regular tonight. And Duncan was sitting with her because Duncan's the talent coordinator.
Duncan was the talent coordinator.
So Duncan comes down. Hey, man, you did great, man. Mitzi wants you to be a regular. And knowing Duncan, I'm just like, God damn it, Duncan's fucking with me. And so I truthfully didn't think it was real at all. Like at no point was I like, this might be legit. It's just like, still fucking with the new guy. So... And he's like, yeah, call in your avails tomorrow. I'm like, all right, man. And then the next day, the Comedy Store called me. And they said, yeah, are you going to put in your avails? I was like, what? This is real? And then Duncan was like, why'd you think I was fucking with you? I go, because you're Duncan. You're Duncan Trussell. Why wouldn't I think you were fucking with me? And then Mitzi gave me a spot immediately opening the show. And then just bombed so hard for 8 people or whatever the first night.
Was she in the room?
No one was there. Yeah, thank God. Yeah, I just remember I did my 5 minutes, and then I'm just trying to throw shit at the wall. And as soon as that light came on, I was so excited just to bring up Argus and not have to perform anymore. And then Argus, oh, wow, you know, we bring up a lot of young pups here at the club. And, you know, tried to smooth things over, basically being like, you know, he's a kid, give him some slack.
At that time, he had seen it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, at that time, he had seen it all. Like,
and I talked to him a bunch because, you know, I was a door guy. So, you know, he'd get there 15 minutes before a set and tell us old stories and stuff. So he covered for me. And then Mitzi would just give me opening spots for the first year or so. And then a couple times she was there, she'd watch me. It was nerve-wracking, but... Should always be
supportive. Well, when you bomb and she'd watch it.
Oh, I'm done. I might as well move.
You got in your car and you're like, yeah, I better look around because this is the last time I'm coming down.
I couldn't even do that. I had to go back to the back door.
I still live by that code, even though she's gone.
Yeah.
Like if I go down there and I have a bad night, I'm like,
she knows.
Fucking Adam's not going to call me back next Tuesday.
Yeah. Like, even though there's no chance. But
just, it's such a psychological beating,
yeah,
that we'd give ourselves. When she was around on Saturday nights, it used to just destroy me. Like the first 3 or 2 months.
Dude,
I'd pray to God. Like, Rick, go talk to Mitzi and keep her in the main room while I do my set.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go see Fat Baby. No, you don't want to go see.
Yeah, that's a
fucking Fat Baby alone.
I remember that. I remember being like, "Who's Fat Baby?" Yeah. And they'd be like, "Cause they'd be on the lineup, and she'd like she'd put you last sometimes."
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And they'd be like, "Who the fuck is Fat Baby?"
Fat
and they go, "That's what she wants Joey Diaz to go by."
Oh yeah.
Fat and you just go up and destroy his Fat Baby.
Fat Baby, and nobody knew my name. No. Fat
Wait, she wanted you to go by? I thought that was just her nickname for you. She wanted you to go by that.
It was on the lineup.
It was on the lineup.
Fat Baby.
Oh no.
Because I posted an old lineup a couple months ago, and the first thing people noticed, like, "Who's Fat Baby?" I'm like, "That's what Mitzi." That's what she called Joey Diaz.
Would they make you bring, like coming up next to the stage, Fat Baby?
No.
Okay, thank God.
The comics right. knew him as Joey.
Okay, it's Joey.
But if Mitzi was there, then you had to do what Mitzi wanted. Baby. And I even saw him once go up in a giant diaper.
Me?
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, no shirt on. and I mean, literally destroyed the room. And in a time when people weren't destroying a room because comedy was in a very grave situation
in
like the mid-aughts, early 2000s.
Yeah.
It was
2000 to 2003.
People were not looking to laugh.
They were not going to the store.
No one was there.
Nobody was
there.
And
it was post 9/11, so everyone was just like, yeah, I don't know. Things aren't good. But it was tough times.
I got to tell you, even pre-9/11 was funny in that place. Just Robert Epavai on Sundays.
So good.
Just Robert Epavai on Sundays. People have to understand that.
That's one of those comedy store specific things that people who've been around, like actually been around, get. Because I remember Robin Williams coming in one night. He was doing press for RV. And he was there like two nights in a 5-month period of time. One was my 25th birthday where I just got hammered with him. And then the next day people were like, you know, he was sober, right? I was like, oh, fuck.
And you drank one?
I drank, smoked. I mean, we got fucking hammered. And you get down the night, he's like, this is the most wasted I've been in 30 years. I'm like, cool, man. I'm not thinking anything of it. The next night, Don Barris is like, I was telling Jimmy Kimmel about you guys last night. And, you know, he said Robin's been in, you know, he's been sober for decades. I'm like, oh, fuck me.
No one told me.
No one said anything. I just thought we were having fun. And then he came back a couple months later. And, you know, I said, look, dude, I'm sorry. I didn't know. He said, oh, I needed to get it out of my system. I'm back being sober and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right. And I truly felt bad. But at the same time, I'm like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
But he comes back and he's hanging out and it's late night. And Robert William Epravia goes on stage and Robin's down by the main room and he walks down the hall and he looks in and he goes, holy fuck, that guy is still here? And I go, yeah. And he goes, I feel like I just saw a ghost. I can't believe that this is still a thing. Just like 30 years of being a paranoid schizophrenic, doing the same Johnny Carson style psychopath, though, comedy set about marijuana and putt look.
Wouldn't he put his finger under his nose?
He'd do that.
Don Barris, because he was a Nazi. Because
Don's a Nazi. Skippy Simon was a Nazi. There was a lot of rambling about how, because Robert William Epravia believed he was supposed to take over the Tonight Show for Johnny Carson. And so when Jay Leno took over, he felt that it was because Jay is part of a Nazi conspiracy against him.
Of course.
And so he will ramble about how Jay Leno is evil and Mavis, his wife Mavis, is evil. And but he wouldn't say Jay Leno because that would be evil. So he always referred to him as Lemon Jello. And I'm not about to go watch Lemon Jello perform the Tonight Show. And I would just sit in the front row and laugh at everything he said. That was my role in the mayhem, was to be his biggest fan. And then Don Barris at some point would be like, you think that guy's funny? I'd be like, he's my favorite comic. He'd go, I'll show you favorite comic. And Don would come down, physically pick me up. And at that point, I weighed about $1.45.
Oh, you were tiny.
And he would pick me up over, like up to his shoulders, and just heave me at Robert Epravia. And I'd just go flailing. And Robert, Nazi attack. And he always called me Eric. No matter how many times I told him my name was Rick.
I'm really sorry about that, Eric. He would lock himself in the bathroom.
He'd have
in that corner,
yeah,
and that kept going on for a while.
Same outfit every day.
Same outfit,
stuffed,
green tooth,
yeah,
green suit,
corduroy suit.
Just same outfit.
Trash bags.
I never smelled them.
Oh, it was
rancid, horrible.
Rancid.
But I know the night that I was out of town, they lit the bathroom on fire to get them out.
Yeah,
and I got the call from Corey. saying, well, did you light Robert Epavaya on fire? I go, I'm in Miami.
Yeah, I'm not there.
Goes, who the fuck would do something like this? I go, why would you think I would out of all the fucking people?
It's got to be Joey.
Yeah, it's got to be Joey. I wouldn't like, I didn't even, it's not that I didn't like Robert. It's not that I knew he was crazy.
Yeah.
And by 12, by the time Robert came in, I was doing coke.
Yeah.
So he was starting to creep me out.
Understandably, yeah.
But it's funny, the story I'm going to tell you now is going to explain a lot of things to you. I have a lot of respect for the doorman there.
Yeah.
More than some of the comics in some situations.
Yeah.
Because you want it that bad.
Like, right.
You're there watching Martin Lawrence come in, Eddie Griffin, Joe Rogan, you know, all these names. At that time.
Yeah, yeah. That's those
were
the...
We were dooring.
Dice and those guys were the names that came in.
Because I had the door on Sundays. She would let me work the door on Sunday and host.
Okay.
And then I would host the second part of the thing, and then I would give Don Barris
the late
duties.
Yeah.
And I'd disappear, go get a package of coke. But that was... You guys were young.
Yeah.
One of my best nights there, and you're going to understand a lot by the story. I walk in one night, and a kid by the name of Johnny Caparulo comes up, and he's working the door. But he's working the back door, and he's watching the comics. And he says to me, I want to know how to get more spots in here. And I'd watched him during the open mic. I'm like, this is a funny fucking kid.
Yeah.
I go, so I decided to go into Joey Diaz mode. I go, John, I don't know if you know this. You got a grease Duncan. And John's like, well, I only make $8. At that time, she's paying shift.
I got 25 a shift.
A shift.
9-hour shift.
These guys would get
$25
a shift.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm getting shift work. I need those $15.
Yeah.
And I go, don't say nothing. All the big timers know that you have to give Duncan the $15. So this went on for like 2 or 3 nights.
He right.
Come back to me. So how do I give it to him? I said, just don't come for your check. It goes directly to him. So I called Duncan that day. Tell Duncan what's going on. And I go, tonight, come down. With cap is down. Let's straighten him out on the $15 rule. And I'll never forget him. He was a kid.
Yeah.
He was a sweet,
yeah,
sweet kid. And he was like, Joey, so what do I have to do first? I go, first off, you have to give him something like a token of his appreciation.
Going full Godfather.
Of 50, 100. And he looked at me like he was like,
yeah,
I'm going to have to call my mother and marry. Like, that's how young you guys were.
Yeah.
Like, that's how, and I'm fucking dying inside. Here comes Duncan.
Caparulo was working at the golf course at the time,
yeah,
making extra money.
Course.
Yeah.
And Duncan came home, and I go, Duncan, tell him the rules, break it down for him. And he goes, yeah, you want spots? I go, get all your $15. And since Diaz brought you in, Diaz gets $5. So. And at first, you could tell he was not happy with it.
Yeah. He's like, that's my hole.
And he's like, okay, it looks like I'm going to have to. We're like, fuck you. Ah. We played a joke on him, and it was great. That's how much I loved that kid.
Like, yeah.
He was a kid.
Yeah.
Ari was a kid.
Yeah.
I still remember being on a fucking hailstorm and getting a call in the original room box. In those days, people would run out and go, Joey, you got a call.
Yeah.
In the original room. And you're like, what? There's no cell phones. I didn't have a fucking cell phone.
Yeah.
I had a pager.
Yeah.
And I remember getting on that call, and it was like, Austin, Texas had a fallout on Sunday night. And I had called her one night, Margie, out of the blue, and said, can I get it? And she called me. And she goes, can you come to Austin, be there Tuesday night? And I'm like, Tuesday night? I got like minus 18 in the bank account.
And right.
Mitzi's check till Friday. And I think I called right from the comedy store. I went to that, remember when the back phone was in the kitchen?
Yeah, yeah.
I had that back phone, you had dial 9, and you get long distance and shit.
Right.
But no, you can make long distance call from there. And then they started saying, somebody keeps making long distance calls from the bar.
Yeah.
It was me.
Yeah, we used to do it from the phone room,
from
too.
From the phone room, too.
Because so that was the...
I went and I called whoever. You had to call like 1-800, hi, 9411, Delta, the number, 1-800-222, and then... You could easily be connected for an extra additional 20 cents. Beep, bucket.
Yeah.
It's on the store. I got to get to Austin. And they gave me, like, it was, this is, plane tickets were all 200.
Right.
It was 200 to go everywhere. And I remember going, Ari was a doorman, but he was booking commercials.
Yeah.
And I go, Ari, I need $200. And Ari gave it to me. He goes, I'm never going to see this. And I go, I promise you, you're going to see this. At that time, me and Ari were friends.
Yeah.
Not brothers. We were just friends. And I remember before I left, I got a SAG check. Like a residual. And I couldn't wait to see him that Tuesday. And I go, here's your $200. He's like, I wrote it off. And ever since then, we've become friends. That's how we became friends.
I remember back then, they didn't have weed stores everywhere. So you still had to like get weed from people. And so I worked at this shitty restaurant in Manhattan Beach, but I just knew a bunch of stoner South Bay kids who grew pot. And so one of them grew this White Widow that was just crazy good. And I would bring it up to the store and smoke everyone out. And I smoked Joey out one night, and he was just like, that shit is fucking crazy. I'm like, yeah. And you're like, you got to get me some of that. I'm like, all right. So worked at the restaurant the next day, brought some up for you. And I remember you were like, you said, I didn't bring money, but can I get you next time I see you? And I'm like, all right. Didn't think anything of it. And I'd already, at that point, like Wheels had fucked me over before, and Mike Ricca and some other guys. And I just remember being like, oh, you know, I want these guys to like me, so it's cool, whatever. And I didn't see you for like 8 months, but you would call me like every couple months. You'd be like, hey, I'm going to be at the store tonight. Are you there? And I'd be like, no, I'm on the road with Paulie. And you'd be like, all right, well, I got you still. And I remember being like, is this guy really going to still give me the money?
Yeah.
And it was almost a year. It was probably like 9 or 10 months before I saw you again.
I went on the road.
Yeah, you were on the road too.
I ate a bag of dick at the Improv one night. And it just cracked me. Like, here I was. It's okay for me to bomb at the Comedy Store.
Right.
At my home. But to bomb away.
Yeah.
And the other side of Hollywood. I bombed in between Nick DiPaolo and Doug Stanhope.
Well, yeah.
And I was a regular
at the store, killer, so,
but
yeah.
I didn't deserve to be at the store. She was just bringing me along. Me, I thought I could do spots at the Improv. I get sandwiched in between two killers.
Yeah.
And I just went on in fact, I went on too long. One was like 9 months.
Yeah.
And then I was just thinking about this. The one I started when because I was away for New Year's 2000.
Okay.
It's going to be 20 years ago.
Right.
Started with a belly room show. That's the first time I ever told stories on stage. So I've been doing comedy about 8 years. And I did a belly room show. Mitzi kept saying, do a belly room show. You get $5 a head or whatever the fuck it was.
Right.
I did a belly room show. I got like 40 people. I think I made like $100 or something like
that.
Something shitty. $80 or something.
Right.
But I spent it all on blow. And somebody snuck a bottle of tequila and we were crazy.
Yeah.
And we just went outside and got hammered afterward. And the next day, I think I would start with like, I would fly into like Buffalo and just do a weekend in Buffalo for Yoda, go over to Toronto.
Right.
This is pre 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would let me into Toronto.
Right.
Do a couple one-nighters for Yuck Yucks, come back, and then go city to city. Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse.
Right.
New Jersey, Northern New Jersey. The shore,
real touring.
D.C. Yeah, but featuring and emceeing.
Yeah.
Just banging it out. 300 one week. 150 one week. You're going week to week. Nobody knows nothing. And some of the weeks I had, there were weeks. They went there 2 weeks open, and I just knew something would happen.
Right.
I would end up somewhere. That Sunday night at the club, somebody's going to say, hey, what are you going to do next? Well,
I'm looking for a
spot. Well, I got a one-nighter on Tuesday, and my buddy one drunk on Friday. If you want to sleep on my couch, you could, and there you go. Boom.
Right.
You're going to pick up 300. So I went out just going out. It's not that I went out on a world Joey Diaz tour.
Yeah.
There was no tours then.
Yeah.
You had anchors.
Yeah.
And while you were out, you were hoping.
Yeah, not premier clubs. Half the shows are just at fucking bars and coffee house.
Mormons do not use curse words.
Right.
You don't even know they're Mormons till you get there.
Yeah.
You're working on a new bit of sticking your dick up your wife's ass without her knowing, and you get there, and there's a fucking Mormon note. There's a Mormons tonight.
Yeah.
You cannot use any R-rated material. It just made you switch it up. You know?
Yeah.
What did you learn all those early years at the store? You learned from every facet.
You
learned things to do, what not to do.
Yeah, from watching comics, both good and bad, you learn what you should never do, what is a good path to take. My problem early on, and I would do okay. I always did okay. You know, I'd bomb some nights and I would do great some nights, but most of the time I was just doing okay then. I was doing what a lot of young comics do, which is I was almost imitating the comics I really liked. So I wasn't writing jokes from my perspective. It would be like, I would be doing a bit, and looking back now, I'm like, you know what? I still think that bit would have been funny if I was Sebastian. But being me, I am nothing like Sebastian, and so it just comes off differently, and it would never work as me. But I wasn't writing from my perspective. I'm watching Sebastian crush every night and going, I need to write jokes like that. And so then working at the store and doing those late night spots and doing, even when I got opening spots or whatever, I never got good spots. So that's out of the question. But I was learning. It took me 2 or 3 years of learning just to be myself on stage, you know, not what I thought I should be, just actually be who I am. People would always go, you're so much funnier off stage. And so it took me a long time to figure.
Does that bother you?
Yeah, oh, drives me mad.
It drives me crazy.
And I know people were doing the same shit to you because yes. You're just such a funny person, like yes, in a conversation where you're like, well, how do I translate it? And it just took, it took bombing a lot to learn to finally be me. And then once I was me, then it was, you know, at that point I started doing a lot of crowd work because I just felt like such a fraud doing the same jokes every night. And once I started doing crowd work, it really started kind of opening up my ability to do well. I started having more sets where I was kind of crushing. And as more and more comedians started hating me for doing it, that I'm the type of person that I kind of get a kick out of pissing people off. So it was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So then for years, that's all I was doing. I was just doing crowd work. And I, you know, was convincing myself, well, you know, someone will let me do Comedy Central with this kind of thing. And then it took another 5 years before I'm like, oh, no one's ever going to let me do that on Comedy Central because they want to know every word you're going to say. I started writing jokes again, getting back into doing some material. But I still, I'm very heavy with crowd work because I feel like that's my specialty.
That's your specialty.
Yeah, that's what I'm good at. And it's not just talking to people and, you know, making fun of them, although that's some of it. But talking to people inspires random, stupid, funny things in my brain that, you know, kind of become bits, I guess. And it's just, it's kind of developed into how comedy works most authentically for me. So
you look very organic up there doing it.
Yeah.
Which is the number one thing when you do comedy.
Yeah.
Is you want it to be as organic as right. It could be. You know, that takes years to learn.
Yeah.
What is organic for those words to naturally come out of you. When you see Doug Stanhope say that word, and you try to mimic that word, it's not naturally coming out of you. It's a funny word. There's words that are funny. Xylophone.
Right. Yeah.
Zito. Yeah, whatever the fuck they are. But that process that you learned at the store, I picked up a bad habit in New York. When I went to New York in 93, everybody spoke to the audience. And I used to go up there with, I would take a 30-minute gig, knowing I had 8 minutes of material, counting on 22 minutes of, hey, how you doing, where you from?
Right.
And I got pretty good at it.
Yeah.
I got pretty good at it, 30-year comedy, 40-year comedy. I was still writing, but that was my go-to, was improvising. And then by the time I went to Seattle, I was really doing it.
Right.
I was fucking making a living of it. But I knew two things. It was 50-50.
Right.
It was either going to destroy or it was going to be a long night.
Right.
Then I got to L.A. and at this comedy store. It took me like 2 years to find my voice at the store. I'm lucky that she stuck it out with me for 2 years. As a comic, you go through a lot of shit like that going from a road feature to becoming a Comedy Store regular, there's a lot of mysticism that goes through your head.
Right.
So the first thing they tell you is not to talk to the audience.
Right.
Okay. And then it's like you have this, you know you're not supposed to talk to the audience, but you do it. And I kept doing it at the store. I kept going through all these phases of tonight, I'm going to say a bit. and let them pause before I go into the next one. Like, I did experimental shit.
Sure.
My 2 years, it cost bombing. Experimental in the comedy world means bombing.
Yeah.
Don't ever get those words confused.
Yeah.
When a scientist is doing an experiment, he's doing it for something positive. When a comedian is experimenting, that's the equivalent of us saying, we're going to go bomb.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to go fuck up tonight.
I'm
going to
be experimenting with some things. Unless you got a lab coat on, you're either sucking dick or you're bombing in my fucking world.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, that I wanted my percentages to get higher. So little by little, I went away from talking to the audience. And that time in Jersey, when I was already a regular, and I was doing Analyze That. And I took the week in Jersey for a film. And I called the guy and told him I'm shooting this movie. So right away, he wanted to hire me.
Sure.
And he made me a feature for a headliner. And that was the big, that was, if that was 202, if I think Analyze That came out in 203,
yeah,
I was still doing the thing. But now I was doing it at the store every night, which was making me fucking deadly.
Oh, yeah. Craft is honed.
Vito started coming in.
Yeah.
And he was very good at that. But Vinny Favorito really wasn't improvising. He was pre-writing all
It was all
shit.
Set. Yeah, yeah, it's like Don Rickles style.
Using it pre, but that's the gift.
Yeah, yeah.
To make it seem like it's happening today.
Yeah.
But the first time you go see Vinny Favorito the next night, you're like, oh,
he's doing sacrilegious.
It word for, yeah. He's doing it word for word. That's not fucking improvising, you bum.
Charles Fleischer would do that too.
Yes, Charles Fleischer would do that. Like, it was,
first time I watch him, I'm like, holy fuck, this dude is quick. And the second night, I'm like, wait a goddamn second.
Wow. And it hurts you.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts your feelings. Yeah. Like, if you go see your favorite comic bomb, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But to see your favorite bombic, your comic, do
you feel like you've been duped.
That, yeah.
You're like,
I want my $20.
This guy fucking lied to me.
I saw the line on the pigeon. You know what I'm saying? When it flew away.
Well, as a young comic who I don't really do any crowd work, it seems like such a risk to do all crowd work because, I do bits for weeks and months before I tried out at a real show. And for you to just say what's on the top of your head at a real show for the first time, like you said, 50-50, to me, it's even like 25-70. Like, there's such a big risk of it bombing that I would, like, I don't even want to take that risk. So to hear that, like, you're just completely going up there cold is amazing.
Explain to him that improvising isn't something you choose.
Yeah.
Improvising is something that one night you realize you're in a jam.
Yeah.
You're in a jam.
You do it. Yeah, you definitely are doing it.
You're
to, you know, you're teaching yourself to swim. You're drowning, but it's you know, it's one of those things where it's truly, you either have the mind and it's gonna work, or you don't. Like, I've had so many comics tell me, like, dude, anyone can do crowd work and blah blah blah, and I go, all right, I've never seen you do crowd work. They go, well, I can do it, and then they go up and they do like 2 minutes of bombing doing crowd work, and they just go straight back to their material, and they're like, yeah, see, it just wasn't working. I'm like, yeah, it's because you can't do it.
Oh,
but
I'm not gonna say who it was. I don't even remember the guy's name, but I saw one guy do like 25 minutes of possibly like the worst crowd work, and it hurts as an audience
member. Yeah,
because to give you a compliment, I started going to the store before I even met Joey, and when I would see you on the lineup, I loved it, but I would also be like, okay, I'm gonna sit in the back a little bit because he's fucking, because you're good,
yeah.
And then I don't know how many years ago you didn't stop, but you didn't do it as much. I kind of was like sad. I was like, oh
yeah,
I missed the crowd work.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people would tell me when I started, because there was a couple years where I was just trying to do material, and it was fine because now I'm more sure of who I am, so my material is more authentically me, I guess. But people would be like, I just, you know, it was nice because I'm at the store all the time and you see the comics doing the same bits, but it was cool because I knew at least you would be different,
right?
And I'd be like, yeah, but it truly makes me feel better when I'm going up there free-minded, just like, this is what I want to do. You know, I'm like not having it all planned out. Like I feel more accomplished doing a set of almost all crowd work than I do material. Not that I think doing material is bad, because I do like doing that as well now. But It's, you know, I've watched so many people bomb doing it. There's a guy, a door guy. Remember Jimmy Pidd?
Yes.
Love Jimmy Pidd.
Chicago kid.
Chicago kid.
Nice kid.
Nice kid. Super funny off stage.
Great kid. Great kid. He still contacts me.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to him this time.
That he lives weird. In Florida now, I think.
Okay, that's what
Yeah, he was in Buffalo for a while, and now he lives in Florida.
Right.
I remember watching him do crowd work one night in the OR, and all the comics in the back were just dying. But it just, there was just nothing to it. There's no substance to his crowd work. He'd be like, yeah, where are you from? Someone would be like, New Orleans. New Orleans? Ain't never been there. And then that was the end of it. We're all just like, what? What? That's your reference? Is that you've never been there? But it literally was destroying all the comics in the back. All of us just losing our shit laughing. And the crowd just like, what the fuck is going on?
Have you ever thought of something so quickly that when it utters your words, your insides almost break with laughter?
Yeah.
That you're like, you walk off there, and I'll never forget being in the store and dying and improvising.
Yeah.
And just looking at somebody and going, where are you from? And they go, Denmark. And me going, I did a book report on you once. And the audience went crazy, and I went crazy. I'm like, how did I even forget that?
Yeah.
Like, no, how did I remember that?
Yeah.
I started sixth grade. I did a book report on Denmark.
Yeah.
I had to get an encyclopedia, rip the pages out,
yeah,
staple them, take them home. And
yeah.
But no, it's a...
That's just brain association, though. And that's, you know, that's one of those things, like just saying, a grown man, you especially, saying that you did a book report on something is fucking hysterical.
It's the truth.
And you're just saying the line out there because that's what you're thinking. Like, Denmark, I don't know shit about you other than the fucking book report. But you saying that, it's fucking hysterical.
It's an experience. Hold on 1 second. I got to ask you some more questions.
Yeah.
And now for a word from our sponsors. Listen. The Church of What's Happening Now is sponsored to you by Policy Genius. Halloween is right around the corner, but you, the thing that really scares Uncle Joey, shopping for life insurance. I hate this shit. But getting life insurance doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. Right now, prices are the lowest they've been in 20 years. That's where Policy Genius comes in. It's the easy way to shop and compare prices for insurance online. Just go to policygenius.com right now. And in minutes, you can compare quotes from the top insurers so you can get the right amount of coverage for the best possible price. And Policy Genius doesn't make life insurance easy. They can also help you find the right home insurance, auto insurance, and disability insurance. Once you apply, they'll handle all the paperwork for you. Listen, getting quotes, making calls, going from web page to web page, it's a fucking pain in the ass. Go to PolicyGenius.com right now. This October, take the scariness out of buying life insurance. You need it. Head to PolicyGenius.com today and compare quotes and apply in minutes. You can do the whole thing on your phone right now. 5 minutes. Policy Genius, the way to buy life insurance. Get it at PolicyGenius.com and tell them Uncle Joey sent you. Stay black. Another issue I had to speak to you about was there's three guys at the store that I knew, and this is why I did what I did early on. There's three guys at the store that if you looked at on paper, they were not going to do well on the road. And that's you, me, Brian Olson. You know, I had extensive conversations with him.
Yeah.
About road work, and people tried to take him on the road.
Yeah.
And it was just...
I did
too much.
Riddles in Chicago once, and you know, I said the guy who owned it and booked it would come to the comedy store and hang out. Just
young
love
kid.
The comedy store. Yeah, Brant. Yeah,
Brant. He's done now.
Yeah, he's out.
He started bouncing checks.
Yeah. He said, well, you know, I brought so-and-so and so-and-so, and they were great. And, you know, I love Brian Holtzman, so I brought him out, and the crowd just hated him.
It was a disaster.
He said it was just brutal. It's so bad.
Chicago. That's yeah. The South Side.
And so it was so bad that Holtzman was just begging, I'm not performing tomorrow. And he was like, oh, come on, just come, you know, you can do the feature. I'm not performing here. Forget it. He said Holtzman bombed so bad the two shows on Friday night that I think he eventually did it, but Brand essentially had to be, like, convince him, like, dude, just come tomorrow. It'll be fine. And I think he had him feature instead of headline to switch the feature and the headliner. But Chicago was just not down with Brian Holtzman.
Not ready.
Yeah.
And they, you know, you've had some problems on the road.
Yeah.
And my first couple of years on the road, you know, I had tons of people telling me not to call back.
Really?
We enjoyed you for the weekend, but you're not really our cup of tea.
Right.
We got a lot of complaints, you know. And,
yeah.
And then it went from, so then I became a regular at the store and I started trimming off the fat.
Right.
You learn from watching other guys that are at your level. That's what's really important at the store. That
yeah.
You guys, listen to the class that you were with is, you know, and just because you were a dog guy, you know, you had Brent with you that walked in with you and Sebastian.
Yep.
It was a hell of a class. It really was.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of the best classes to ever walk in there.
Yeah, it was great. About it. And I was like really the freshman. With us. Yeah.
Yeah, like you guys meshed with us right away. We were like 10 years older, but
yeah.
It was the best class. Like that, Rick Ramos. And
right.
The guy that got really chubby. Jason Lucas.
Oh, Jason. J-Lo, yeah.
J-Lo, you know. This was family.
Yeah.
Richie.
Dude, Richie Taylor.
What,
the funniest man to never do comedy?
Dog, you know, Richie Taylor was the shit on Sundays.
Yeah.
Sundays was a different night up there. It was getting your dick going deep night. Like, if you didn't get your dicks up and do an eight ball on Sundays at the store,
you were fucking up.
You weren't doing it right. Like, people were fucking getting fucked up.
Yeah.
I still remember being out there at 4 a.m. with Eddie Griffin talking about 1,000 samurais killed Bruce Lee, but one of them touched him. In a vein, and he died, and I'm right. Like, oh my God, this is the reason I snort coke, like shit like that. You know? I mean,
yeah, Eddie was always there till
the wee nights.
Yeah,
that reasoning was why when I bombed after Nick DiPaolo and Stanhope that night, I just took off. And I did the first tour. It slips my memory. It was like 9 months.
Yeah,
I stayed out there. And then the tour of 2000 started the first week of November and went all the way till April. I stayed out of L.A. completely.
Wow.
So I would, even though I had a couch at Josh Wolf's house.
Right.
I just disappeared. Every 6 weeks, I'd send clothes home. I'd go to a new Walmart, get a couple new shirts. I'd send CDs home, get new batteries for the DVD player. And I just had Greyhound will travel.
Wow.
No car.
Hounding it.
No credit card. There was no ATM card.
Right.
It was cash, hoof, a notebook, a pen, and have couch will travel.
Right.
And I knew that if I came back before that, I wouldn't stay at the store. I had to be. So I took what I learned at the store. You know, on the road, you can expand on it.
Yeah.
And then when you come back to L.A., you cut it back down.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, you lose 20 minutes. You can't do that joke about Topeka no more. So right. You got to write that off. You
yeah.
know, all these jokes that you picked up in 9 months on the road.
Sure.
It was a real experience for me. And that's why I think until Rogan started taking me out, that cemented me with people.
Right.
Until then, I was really going out to get beat up.
Yeah.
Until from 91 to 2001 or two. I was going on the road to get beat up. Like, I stayed in rooms that the glass was broken.
Right.
At Alaska. You know, we stayed in the back room of a band room.
Yeah.
With beds and cum on the beds. And, and the snow was coming through the fucking window.
I did.
You know?
I wonder if it's the same place.
Yeah, Chilco Charlie's.
Oh, yeah. No, I did a place called The Shed. And they just put you in a little condo above the bar. And I was there, I think it was February, and the window in the living room was shattered. And so it was just like negative 10 degrees air in the living room of the condo. And I just remember being like, yeah, the window's broken. They're like, yeah, it's been broken since like September. I'm like, why would we? And so I just remember like in the bedroom, I'd close the door and then I'd stuff the towel on the door so the cold air wouldn't blow in. And then I just had every blanket in the condo on me, just dying. Like, is this worth it?
Oh, my God. Kipps in New York had a Bananas. and they just hated the comics, so they would put you downstairs.
They hated.
And it's, you know, the windows were covered with snow.
Yeah.
The windows were covered.
You can't even see it.
You stayed down there all day freezing. They gave you 30% off at the restaurant. You didn't want to eat their food. It was so bad. And it was next to a gas station. That was your life.
Jesus.
From Friday to Sunday. So you left Monday. You either ate at the restaurant or you ate at the gas station. There was like Indian people, and they would give you those Hindu eggs.
Right.
With the curry dust on them.
Oh, yeah.
You're waking up with a fucking hangover from the night before, and all of a sudden you gotta eat these curried fucking eggs. Fuck you. I'd just eat Cheetos at the fucking gas station with a hot dog.
Yeah.
And that shit didn't look too good.
No.
One of the worst weeks ever was the old Kansas City Club, Sanford and Sons, when it was a block away from a Hooters.
Yeah.
A gas station. And that was it.
Yeah.
How's Hooters breakfast?
You ate breakfast at the hotel, and it was continental. It was yogurt, a banana.
A little box of coffee, cereal, maybe, yeah.
A little box of cereal. There was no eggs then.
Yeah.
There was no toast then. There was no muffins then. That free breakfast, no. So you lived on, you stole like 10 bananas.
Yeah.
And you brought them up to the room, and hopefully the headliner, if you went to do radio with him, he'd stop somewhere.
That's get you
got
something.
Like CVS or
yeah.
You got like, you know, bottled waters or fucking, you know, it was, you know, you're living on $500 a week and the plane ticket comes out of that.
Right.
That's your toughest period of your life.
Yeah. That's
and
brutal.
That's why I say you got to do 15 of those.
Yeah.
Got to do 15 of those on your own.
To really grow.
To really grow.
Make sure you want it because it's not worth it.
It teaches you how to get 100 a set times five. You know,
yeah.
Tom Segura said something months ago. He goes, I can't believe comedy clubs are still paying 100 a set to features.
Yeah, I saw him.
They're paying 100 a set and they cut out the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I can't, like, it's not worth it for me to feature anymore.
It's not.
Because I can make, if I do main room Friday and Saturday at the Comedy Store, I'll make about $600, $500 to $600. And I don't have to fly anywhere, go anywhere. And if someone wants me to come feature in Indianapolis to see, you know, well, we need to see you. It's like, I'm going to end up spending money. I got to pay for childcare. Like, it's just, it's endless. Exactly. I'm going to lose money to go do it. So
the feature world has been, the feature world was never really a great world to be in.
Yeah.
Especially when you get into the Midwest with some of the bookers that just do one night. But the feature world is just to improve,
yeah.
To go to different cities, to learn the different cultures.
Give you time,
in the cities.
Yeah.
You know, you go into deeper holes,
yeah.
Where I wouldn't go at this level right now.
Sure,
you'd go into deeper holes, like you go into Billings, Montana, and
right.
The other one in Montana, where you know I'm thinking about going to Billings next year because I used to go there. Well, nobody goes to Billings.
Yeah,
must have 1,000 fucking comedy fans that are ready.
Yeah, Montana's fun. It's Montana's a little back country, but it's fun.
Fun. They were doing 150 miles an hour for a couple of years.
Yeah, they're not going to get offended by jokes, which is beautiful in this day and age.
No, they're waiting for somebody to come up there. You know, if you look up Montana, there's really no comedy rooms.
No.
I guarantee it's whatever Tribble has.
There's no population to keep something. Like, I guarantee you could draw there, but there would never be a club that could just, you know, book you and then have 3 weeks of guys who aren't known. Because there wouldn't be a crowd to go do it.
But all those cities are small, and they're looking for something to do on a Friday night.
Very true.
Even the one they opened up in Alabama. Didn't they open up a club in Alabama?
Style? Yeah. What is it? Zany's opened one.
Zany's opened one.
It's
right over. It's right over. It's 4 hours from Tennessee.
Yeah.
And it was great.
It's the same company that has one in Arizona.
Right.
Liberty, or something like that.
It's great. It's a great room.
Yeah, I've heard.
In Philly. He brings cheesesteaks in, you know, he tries. But even those clubs, I've always admired those clubs because they're starting from scratch.
They're providing something, yeah.
It's very easy to open up a club in Atlanta, but then you got to go hand-to-hand combat with 600
the other clubs, yeah.
You open up something where nobody else is, where you're the only fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's going to take you 6 months to establish yourself.
Yeah.
Especially if you open up in June.
Right.
Like Montana, Utah, you know, there's cities that you're not going to draw during the summer. Buffalo.
Everyone's going to be out.
Buffalo every August. He goes in his pocket. He loses every August.
Yeah. The club in Alaska that I performed at didn't do shows at all during the summer.
Yeah,
because you know, they get 20 hours of daylight during the summer, so everyone is outside the whole time. And then during the winter, they get 2 hours a day of sunlight, so people are ready to laugh because you can't go outside. It was negative 30 degrees when I landed. And I just remember being like, what the fuck am I doing here?
What was the date you walked into the store?
It would have been beginning of October of 2002. I had lived in L.A. for 4 days the first time I did open mic, the Comedy Store. And it took me about 2 months to get a job. And then I started working right before New Year's 2002. And I worked there for 2.5 years until Pauly fired me while I was on the road with Pauly. So I didn't get a door shift covered. He called me on on Tuesday, said, dude, we're going to Charlotte, bro. And I go, oh, all right. He said, yeah, rent is easy. Book the commercial, dude. You got to go with me. I went, oh, all right, cool. I got my Thursday shift covered. I got my Saturday shift covered, but no one would cover my Friday shift. So I'm like, all right. I told Dean, no one will do it. See if you can find someone. Didn't think anything of it. Went to Charlotte, did shows Thursday night. Things were great. Did shows Friday night. Things were great. Saturday afternoon, meet Pauly for lunch. He's like, dude, you didn't get your door shift covered. I go, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to do it. I told Dean, sorry, dude. Fired me on the road. And I'm like, oh, that sucks. And then the other part of me is like, I work 9 hours a night for $25. I don't think this is a loss necessarily. I was already established at the store, so I was going to get my times. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm almost like, all right, whatever. That's cool. I started working other random shit jobs when I was in town and stuff. And then Pauly still took me on the road with him for another year, probably, before I got good enough that he had to fire me. Classic headliner move, I guess.
So you've been going in and out of that dump for 17 years.
Yeah.
And when I say dump, I say it like
it's a beautiful, yeah, absolutely.
It's a beautiful place. You've become a man in there.
Absolutely.
You have a family now. You have a wife and a child.
Yeah. Met my wife at the Comedy Store.
Are you happy that you chose this path?
Absolutely. There isn't anything else I would rather be doing.
What were you starting for? Were you reaching to be an engineer? I mean, I could tell you're not a stupid kid. You're intelligent. You come from good stock. I mean, what were you looking to do at first?
Honestly, growing up, I wanted to, you know, I guess I was like a lot of kids. I wanted to be an athlete, but I was always tiny. By the time I was in high school, it was very apparent I was never going to play basketball or baseball, the things I loved. I was a distance runner, not a lot of money in distance running. So I went to college for film school.
Where'd you go to college at?
First year I went to a small arts college called College of Santa Fe in New Mexico.
Okay.
And it just was kind of shady. It's so shady. Like Ryan Mervis went there. Annie Letterman went there. It's so shady that it's the only college I've ever heard of that closed. Like, they just straight closed the college maybe 10 years ago. Yes, it's not working. So they closed it, and then they reopened it under a different name, and then it went bankrupt again, and they miraculously burned to the ground. But went there for a year, made some friends. The guy whose couch I slept on when I first moved to L.A. was a guy I met freshman year of college at College of Santa Fe. And then I transferred to KU. Went to KU for...
Lawrence?
Yeah, up in Lawrence.
Look at you.
Fucking loving it.
Look at you. Big slinging there.
Good. Oh, dude.
Hot women.
Hot girls.
Hot. KU Lawrence.
Tons of drugs.
I was totally into it.
And like, people always say, do you have a lot of friends, Lawrence? I go, you know what? I knew 18 drug dealers, and I probably had 5 friends, but... You know, I was always calling
Lawrence
somebody.
Is fun, bro.
Yeah.
Lawrence is fucking fun.
I definitely had a good time. And I started doing comedy when I was at KU. And like I said, when I was 21, I was out.
You never finished?
Never finished. Told my parents, you know, I'm really into comedy.
Save the money. Don't worry about nothing.
Yeah. I just said, I don't know what the point of doing this is. Well, I'm going to get a film degree from KU and then move to L.A. It's worth the same as nothing. So it's not like someone's going to be like, you graduated from University of Kansas Film School? Come direct a movie. It's just like, man, no connections. I was literally getting nothing out of it. I went to film school there for 2 years, and I never saw a camera. was basically just film history. I had to take 10,000 classes about...
We're going to show you Citizen Kane today. Notice the lighting. How impressive is the lighting?
I mean, I don't give a fuck about Citizen Kane. Show me a fucking goddamn movie that would inspire anybody today.
But look, they did a Zoom. Can you imagine the Zoom? This was groundbreaking.
I'm like, yeah, but that was 70 years ago. Who gives a fuck about the first time someone zoomed a lens? Teach me how to make a fucking movie.
Well, if you make it to senior year, you might get into classes. I was like, I might get into classes? I'm not waiting around for this shit.
It's crazy that if you just come out here at 18.
Yeah.
Get a job as an AD.
You'll move up faster.
By the time you're fucking 21, you'll have somebody teaching you the business. It's that guaranteed, people. I'm telling you, if you got half a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And if you really want, don't say that. I've always wanted to shoot movies and come out here and they make you do a cable and you fucking choke.
Yeah.
I'm talking if you're ready and willing to shoot movies, you just come out here. You'll get a job. I know people who've done it. I know 20 people. That's the easiest route.
Yeah.
That's the easiest route.
You start, they teach you all over again anyways.
They teach you all over again anyway. Before you waste that $80,000, hang out with your buddies in Manhattan and shoot short films. Listen, I know 1,000 people who shoot short films. You know where they end up? In the short toilet. You know, I've shot 20 short films. I can't tell you where they all been. I saw a kid on Facebook the other day that I love dearly, but he's retarded because God made him that way. You know, especially comedy wise.
Yeah,
and he's always shooting these movies, and it's like, why do you keep posting them on Facebook?
Yeah, no one's
and
watching.
He
that.
Took a picture with the chick that. The movie was shot in Vegas, and you could tell the chick had sucked 80 dicks. Like, she just got out of rehab to shoot this film.
Yeah.
And she wasn't in a drug rehab. She was in a sperm rehab.
Sure.
How to get it out of your stomach. You could just see it. They put a tight dress on, and she had rolls, and she had lumps. And I'm like, all those movies, you're just wasting your time. You know?
Yeah, no one watches
From
that
2007
shit.
To 2010, I would get a request to do those a week.
Yeah,
and I would say, we'll make it easy for you. We'll shoot it close to your house. Listen, it's not even worth it.
Yeah,
because what are you gonna do with it?
Yeah,
well, my cousin's sister's boyfriend works for Netflix, and she said if we bring them this in 6 weeks, then when you do it, you bring it to them, they quit. They went over to TNN. They're not even working whatever no more. So now you got this stupid thing. I know 1,000 people conservatively.
Yeah.
Between short films, specials, films that they remortgage their homes for.
Yep.
You don't know what you're doing.
It never ends. Yeah.
Let it go.
I used to get a lot of people who'd be like, yeah, we're going to do this short film. And I go, all right, so what's the deal? Well, we're going to try and enter it into some festivals.
Done.
I go, okay. And then the other thing I noticed, like, I knew some people who made short films that they used basically to try and, you know, sell an idea to a studio or whatever it was. And so then I'd have friends who were like, yeah, I got this small part in the short and, you know, they're pitching it to so-and-so. And then they make it and it's kind of crappy, but what, you know, it looks nice, I guess. They used the right equipment and then they pitch it to whatever studio they were selling it for and they buy it for a little bit of money and any extra money they have, they use to hire people who are not the people who made the short film.
Yes.
So you basically just... gave someone else a break instead.
I think the adage is this. This is it, and write it down if you want, because it works. First time, shame on you. Second time, shame on me. I did 20 of them. I did them for the experience behind a camera. I was a struggling comic. Montreal didn't want me. Couldn't find an agent. The only way I could get it is through the back door.
Yeah, that's still where I am, so
it's funny
but I'm not doing it.
I did one that was very mobby, that had Fox, Fox has different divisions.
Yeah.
It had Fox all over it. I mean, fucking great food, Red Bulls on the set, you know.
Yeah.
Red camera. I mean, these people spent money on this short film, which was an idea that Fox had picked up and they were going to sell it, and then they felt that the movie, the idea for TV was a bit rough. It was two gay gangsters.
Okay.
Were they wrong?
Yeah.
It would have worked. With the headquarters was a pink pussycat on on Santa Monica Boulevard. Yeah. We had a movie theater, and you know, and it was a great idea all the way through. It won the Gay Film Festival. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
They still play it on the Gay Network. What's it?
Logo.
Logo. They still play it. People help me up. I just saw you on Logo. Oh, my God. You know, I did that one. Then I did another one that while I was shooting it, I heard whimpers from a friend of mine that they were negotiating that script for a bigger studio. The director was unsettled, so he wanted to shoot it immediately.
Right.
With the make it a low budget, which a lot of people didn't get paid, which I was one of those people. He sold the movie. They did it. And they did exactly what you, you know, I mean, these people are going to pay me $100 a day. And they were like, hi, we're starting rehearsal on Monday the 18th. I'm like, rehearsal for what? What is this, Oklahoma?
Yeah, but
I didn't sign up for a play.
Rehearsal, yeah.
There's no rehearsals for $100 a day.
Yeah.
I went back and forth for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Like, Papa don't rehearse for $100 a day. When I did Spider-Man 2, they paid me scale and there was no rehearsing.
Yeah.
So if you want to rehearse, you come down to my house and I'll do the rehearsal.
I'll read line with you. The
they were furious. And I mean, it was a horrible lingo.
Yeah. You
know, a fucking monkey could do it.
You know?
You didn't need no fucking acting class for this. And I remember I went back and forth with them. Like, listen, I've been here 10, 11, 12 years. I'm not rehearsing.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I did the movie. They did the film screening. Did I go? I don't want to go. But I bumped into the three other mobsters one day at an audition. We were all there for commercial. And they were,
yeah.
Did they call you? And I'm like, no, they didn't call none of us. I go, what'd you expect? Look at the director. He was a scumbag.
Yeah.
He was out of UFC film school. He thought he was fucking Johnny Bananas.
Yep.
I just checked on him about 2 years ago. That was it for him.
Yeah, he was done.
That was it.
I'm going to be Quentin Tarantino.
That's
to
crazy.
Fucking. He's worked
That's
living
crazy.
In a fucking one bedroom.
That's crazy.
Granada
how you,
Hills.
How you quit your dream after that much commitment.
Yeah.
I looked at it. It was 2009.
Yeah.
Disappeared after 2009. Did that one, did a studio film? Must have fucked it up with the studio.
That right. Boy, I could have seen that. Yeah. And then they all talk. So once you really fuck someone over.
So how excited are you for tomorrow night?
I'm excited, man. You know, like I said, I just wanted to be able to do an extended set here for a long time and film it, have something put out so I can hopefully start building somewhat of a fan base. And
how old is your baby now?
She's three.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Beautiful, beautiful little bastard.
I see the pictures that you put up. And
I taught her my name because I think it's important, you know, if they get lost or whatever, be able to say mommy, daddy's name, whatever. So she knows my name. And the other day she comes in, I'm cooking her dinner. You know, I cook and do all that stuff for her. And she comes in, she goes, Daddy, I need my Muppet Baby off the shelf. I go, all right, I'll get it for you in a second. I'm cooking this. Give me 2 minutes. She goes, fine. Takes a few steps back, stands in the kitchen, just staring at me, disappointed. Just sitting there. And then she goes, Rick, get the Muppet Baby off the shelf. And I go, whoa, we don't. You don't call me Rick. She goes, that's your name. It is, but you call me Daddy. I'm Daddy. Fine. Just attitude. Where I'm like, where did this come from?
Yeah. That's.
She's in preschool. There's another girl named Julia. So she broke something, I think, at preschool and blamed the other Julia. Said, no, it wasn't me. It was the other Julia. Got away with it. And so then at home, she was standing on one of her toys or breaking or something. I go, get off that. You're going to break it. She goes, I didn't do it. It was the other Julia. I go, the other Julia isn't here. It was you. It was you. No, it wasn't me. Just wouldn't give up
She'll
the lie.
Blame. You got to love
her. I'm like, damn.
You're not going to.
You're learning life quick. City girl.
Where are you living?
I live out in Calabasas.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You like it up there?
Love it. It's nice.
You like to drive?
It's a bit of a drive.
How many nights you come down to the store now?
Like 3 or 4. So.
Can you believe you've gone this? Can you believe you and I are here 17 years later having this conversation?
It's
you remember
crazy.
What I used to look like? You were like,
he's not going to make it.
When I first met you, my days were numbered. I didn't even know if my skin was green and shit. I just saw another picture.
Dude, I remember one night I was standing up in the front patio with Duncan Trussell and you walked up pouring sweat and you go, hey, do you guys do coke? And Duncan goes, I do. And you go, you got to take this. I can't. If I hold on to this, I'm going to do it all. And you just hand Duncan a bag. And Duncan's like, thanks. And then you walk away. And I'm just like, whoa. And then Duncan's like, all right, I'm out of here, I guess. Yeah, Duncan just disappeared with a bag of blow.
Duncan was my drug buddy in those days. Whatever I had that I didn't want, like, I was speed, dying. Yeah. Heroin, boogaloo pills, just give it to Duncan. Duncan was like Mikey on the Life commercial. Yeah. I don't want to eat it. You eat it. Give it to Mikey. Mikey will eat it. Fuck yeah.
Oh, he took it immediately. I do. I'm like, well, are we? No? I guess Duncan's taking it. Okay.
What time tomorrow night?
It's 10:30 on Thursday.
10:30, main room.
Main room Thursday.
Sunset.
Yep.
A la Richard Pryor on Sunset.
That's right.
No pressure.
Biggest names. You got to live up to that hype. But yeah, should be good. Hopefully people will come out.
It's have good, a good to time. Know that you're having a hard time. I might take you out with me a couple of weeks and fuck around and go torment people on the road. With
yeah.
Fucking high-powered fucking savage like yourself.
Yeah, I'm terrible at all of the business side. So, you know, I've never had a manager or an agent or anything. I've always just been flying solo and, you know, fucking up the world the best I can.
Are you over there at All Things Comedy? They'll take good care of you. Those guys are the best comedy managers there are.
Yeah, they're good.
They're the best people in the world, those guys. So, all right, motherfuckers. Me, I got no dates for you. I got dick till November 7th, Motor City Casino in Detroit. Oh, shit! And then November 8th, I'm at the Funny Bone in Omaha. We're not fucking around. Before I wrap this show up, I want to talk to you people about something. Listen. Baseball playoffs, the World Series, you got football, you got college football, and you're sitting there telling me you're fucking broke. Go fuck yourself. I'm sitting here with mybookie.ag. You're over there sitting telling your grandmother and all your friends, I went 3-for-4, I went 4-for-9. Do something about it, bitch. Put your money where your mouth is. Let me tell you something about mybookie.ag. They got better incentives and more lines than any other sports book, period. And this year they're running a super contest. $100 to enter. You pick 5 teams a week against the spread. You rack up the points. First place is guaranteed $100,000. Where the fuck are you going to get that action from? Nobody. They just revamped their site, and it's looking fucking tremendous. So go take a look if you haven't already. Listen, we got a plethora of games this weekend. We got Baseball World Series. You got NBA, not NBA, but you got preseason for you fucking degenerates. I ain't mad at you. 1-800-GAMBLER. Get your life together. But if you want to fucking play to win, and that's what you're looking to do, my bookie's the way to go. Because you play, you win, you get paid. And today, you double your first deposit. They'll double your first deposit. Use promo code CHURCH to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit. Up to $1,000. Who's better than you? Nobody. Visit mybookie.ag today. That's mybookie.ag. And don't forget to use promo code CHURCH when you're creating your motherfucking account to claim your bonus. Because with mybookie, you play, you win, you get paid. And this is a time of the year when you need money. Your kid needs fucking roller skates. The CHURCH is also brought to you by policygenius.com. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers so you can get the right amount of coverage at the best possible price. And Policy Genius just doesn't make life insurance easy. No. They can also help you find the right auto, home, and disability insurance. Once you apply, they'll handle all the paperwork for you. Listen, Halloween's around the corner. But one thing that really scares me is fucking shopping for insurance. And it scares the fuck out of you, too. Right now, insurance prices are the lowest they've been in 20 years. And that's where PolicyGenius.com comes in. Right now, this October, take the scariness out of buying life insurance. Head to PolicyGenius.com today to compare quotes and apply in minutes. You can do the whole thing on your phone. Right now, couple swipes, couple clicks. PolicyGenius, the way to buy life insurance. Get it at PolicyGenius.com and tell them Uncle Joey sent you. The CHURCH is also brought to you by one of my favorites because it's about health. It's like right now, you know, if you don't go to the dentist and clean your fucking mouth, you might die of a heart attack because that plaque goes to your heart. That's what they say. What do you do when you got a dirty dick? That affects everything. When your balls smell and it creeps into your asshole, you can't even buy some fucking little Chinese chick to lick your ass in Mexico for the small 20. You got to start taking care of yourself. Everybody wants their asshole licked, but nobody wants to wipe it or fucking put deodorizer. The same goes for your balls, and the same goes for your love stick. Listen, that dick ain't there to fucking procreate. What's that word? Procreate? That dick ain't for procreating. It's for sucking, especially during Halloween. There's nothing better than a virus sucking your dick on Halloween. Tell me I'm lying. Uncle Joey's here to let you know, with this Halloween, keep the cobwebs, the spiders, the lice out of your fucking dick fucking sack and clean that fucking mojo stick before she sucks your tailpipe. My friends over at Manscaped created the tool you need to shave your balls with. It's called the Lawnmower 2.0. I use it myself. I'm about to do a little Halloween trimming, which I'll make a video for you cocksuckers for this week. Oh, so God, you're ready to see how I trim my nutsack with the Manscaped fucking Lawnmower 2.0. They threw away the 2.0. Why? Because the people like Lee. He's got that Jew head on there. He don't condition it. Even a lawnmower can't cut Jew's balls as Lee's balls hair. But with fucking Manscaped 2.0, he's good to go. It's a skin-safe technology. For you momos in the back, that means it won't nick or snag your ball sack. No stitches. You understand me? You ever have a girl only suck one fucking nut because the other one's got stitches on it? You don't need that aggravation. Plus, it's perfect to travel, and it's easy to charge. You get Manscaped wherever you go. You could do it one-handed while you're finger-banging your wife with the other hand. Manscaped will get your fucking schlong looking nice and shiny. Remember, you trim the fucking yard, the tree looks bigger, right or wrong? That's what I'm trying to tell you. You want to get your dick sucked on Halloween? Trick or treat, motherfuckers. Manscaped Lawnmower 2.0. This is the way to go. And if this is the first time you've considered manscaping, they got the deal for you. The perfect package comes with the lawnmower and a safety razor plus to trim those little fucking stubborn hairs down by the bottom of your dick. And underneath, remember when you pick up your nutsack, you got that little row of hair, it looks like you're Johnny Mohican? You can shave that down, so when they stick their tongue in your ass, it's like a chocolate bonbon. All they taste is lunch and skin. You know what I'm saying? The perfect package comes with the lawnmower, the safety razor plus, and a crop preserver. A specially formulated deodorant so your balls don't stink. And the reviver. When you're an old man like me, your balls crunch up all day. When you got them in your underwear, you hit them with the reviver. The spritz and tones and refreshes your junk, and it keeps it cool. It's like they're smelling Bengay. They know you're old. You know what I'm saying? With the perfect package, your pouch will be padded and your pole will be perfect. What else? What are you living for? Are you living for? I like riding horses. Listen, I like my dick sucked. And if you like getting your dick sucked like Uncle Joey, you got a Manscaped, okay? Plain and simple. Now, the church can get 20% off your first order when you use promo code CHURCH at manscaped.com. If you order the perfect package, they're going to throw in a free travel bag for you motherfuckers. But you got to use promo code CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H. That's manscaped.com. Use promo code CHURCH, 20% off your first order. And you ladies, you know, your little fucking bats could use a little trimming for the fucking holidays. You might as well live it up like us. Get the lawnmower, trim that fucking bush so you don't have those little side things. When I'm eating pussy, your cheek gets caught in one of those hairs that grow sideways. I got friends that got scars, look like Indians, because they got fucking things. So you can use Manscaped on your little skanky monkey too, all right? So anyway, I want to thank Manscaped. I want to thank PolicyGenius.com, and I also want to thank my bookie for always having her back and helping us bring this podcast to you. I want to thank Rick Ingram. Do not forget to support Rick Ingram tomorrow night, Thursday night, the motherfucking Comedy Store, 10:30 show, all things comedy. A lot of people walking around, a lot of action. Go support this guy. This guy's earned his fucking stripes. He's not some fucking mook that fucking put a thing up on YouTube and now they like him because he's singing Arab songs or playing with his cat. This motherfucker's the real deal. I love him with all my heart. Thank you very much, Rick.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank you guys for the love and for fucking always having a back. And don't forget, you got the world by the balls. It's up to you. Why fuck around like the rest of these non-gluten motherfuckers? Take what's yours. Go get a gun. Whatever you need to do. Fucking eat some ass. Trick or treat. I love you, motherfuckers. See you Monday morning. Tip-top Magoo. Kick this fucking mule, Lee. little UFO.